doing things at once these days. So this is a sense that we can really drop our busyness and be in present in a different way. And then what we learn in ritual is that we always open ritual and close ritual with the same thing. So we'll open with a chant and close with a chant. And we do this mudra, this hand gesture that if you're welcome to do, or you can do like this or this, it's an offering gesture. Because, as I mentioned before, as Buddhists, we're told not to proselytize. We're not told we can't go out and knock on doors and try to convert people. But what we aren't, so because of that, we have to actually ask for teachings. We can't receive them without asking, which again I love, because when we really want something and we ask, then we're open to it, right? And if you're anything like me, as soon as someone comes up and tries to heart solve something, and my heart's closed and I shut down, and I'm like, no way, I'm a little suspicious. So this just immediately, okay, gets us into a different mode with that. And what we're offering is this whole beautiful, perfect world. And in Judaism, there's this phrase called tikkun olam, which means repairing the world. And the idea is that the world that we're in is a broken place. There's suffering in it, there's pain in it, there's poverty, there's war. But it also holds this vision that it can be repaired, it can be healed, it can become whole, perfected. And we can do it. That's how it gets done. It isn't a God out there. It's through our own hearts and minds and our own creating this perfect world. So that's what we offer in request for these teachings. And who would like to say first?
Sashi Udi Jishin Nito Kham Vira Vinshi Nindhe Kimbadi Sanye Shindu Nite Uwagi Rokun Nandak Shimba Chubasho Yam
I'm just nervous right now. Can you edit it first?
Sure. This is very Sunil, keeping it real. So let's meditate first. And what we're going to do is a variation on the condition of setting an intention with a sense of loving kindness. It's a meditation we've been doing frequently to open our retreats and our courses. And even if you don't know meditation, if you haven't had a lot of instruction or practice, just settle in, find a posture where your being is stable, relaxed, but alert. Helps to always have the spine straight. Allow your eyes to be shut down halfway or all the way. And begin by settling the body, speech, and mind in their natural state. We settle the speech in its natural state by allowing the respiration to find its natural rhythm. Allowing the breath, letting And then letting your awareness descend into the body, right down to the ground. Are you feeling this sense of solidity wherever your body contacts the ground? Giving your thinking mind a vacation, letting go of thoughts and concepts, allowing the felt, physical, tactile sensations to be what fills the field of your awareness. And like a fragrance permeating a room, and allow your awareness to begin to expand into the space of your whole body, filling your body. Body itself to rest at ease in the posture of comfort, relaxation, and stillness, yet vivid, awake, aware. And in the spirit of loving kindness into the heel of your quiet, still, grounded body, speech, and mind, begin to ask yourself who, or just hold this question, throughout this course, what quality of heart would you love to experience? What quality of heart would you love to experience during these 3 weeks, especially that brings you a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction and well-being? Is holding this question in your heart, in your awareness, and allow whatever wants to emerge to emerge. For your imagination can really run wild. Be as big as it wants to be. Opening up to your heart's yearning, really of what you long for from this class, from this course. And imagine yourself becoming that, experiencing that. Begin to work with the breath so that on each inhalation, begin to really feel and contact that deep, wild desire, that yearning. And on each exhalation, imagine it so. Imagining it being so radiating out like a warm, white, loving light, saturating every molecule in your body, your being, in your mind. creating it with the reality of experiencing that which you long to experience. And, of course, clearly we can't do this alone without help or reliance on anyone or anything else. So begin to pose, to hold the question, what would you relieve, what would you love to receive from other people around you, from the environment, both here in this room, the people in the environment, and also in your daily life? What would you love to receive to support your heart's yearning, longing, your own wish for the quality of heart you wish to experience in these weeks? Again, letting go of all censoring, of all editing. Allow yourself to begin to connect with what it is you long to receive, to awaken your own heart quality. And then begin to imagine how it would be from moment to moment, from day to day, to in reality be receiving this. How it might feel in your body, how it might feel in your being to receive it. And begin to feel with each inhalation that you're receiving all that is your heart's desire, breath by breath. Imagining the light, the warmth, the gifts of the world drawn into your heart, freely given, freely received. With each exhalation, relaxing into the space of that, the feel of that, the seeing. And releasing this, begin to pose another question, which is knowing, understanding, we're all constantly changing, moment to moment. What kind of person would you love to become through this course, through these 3 weeks? What qualities or characteristics would you like to be free of, and what would you like to embrace, to embody? And then begin to feel with each exhalation that you're letting go and releasing the qualities that you're ready, that you're longing to release. With each inhalation, feel that you're embodying the qualities you want to become. Each of us is constantly influencing the world around us, breath by breath, and definitely in every human interaction. we don't even have a choice in this matter. We're influencing the world around us, everyone. So imagine now that you've received all that you long for, that you've experienced all that you yearn to experience, that you've released all the qualities you wanted to release and become embodied, all the qualities you desired to embody. So during this 3-week course then, from your own unique background, history, qualities, what is it that you would love to give the world? What's the greatest good that you can imagine offering? Offering to those around you, near and far, now and in the future. And allowing your imagination to run wild. And with every inhalation, feel that you indeed, the reality of having this to offer, of being this person who can offer. And with every exhalation, feel yourself giving out these gifts of loving kindness, of the goodness that you are and that you have to offer. Each exhalation, giving it out to the world, to the environment. And I always love to imagine the world benefiting as I do this. To the mind to release. Bring your awareness again to rest quietly in the present moment, felt experience awareness. And then as you're ready, turning your awareness back into the room, into your body and to movement, and opening your eyes. Okay. So, super excited to be doing this course. I've kind of been imagining it for a while. It feels like already like 3 weeks is too short. I almost wish we could just go into a longer retreat on this. So my background is just that I stumbled into Buddhism when I was 19 and never left. I was ordained as a Zen priest and studied in the monastery for 4 years. And then after a couple of decades of practicing in Zen, discovered that Tibetan Buddhism was calling me. So I've been practicing and teaching in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition since 2000, so I guess that makes it going on 18 years. And this is one of my favorite practices, especially when I was thinking about these few days, or these few weeks and what to teach. I'll talk more about it, but it really called to me to teach this with Sunil, so I'm just excited that it actually is happening. Happy to be there.
I guess that's my turn. My name is Sunil, and Jay introduced me to Omi like a couple of years ago and told Omi that I do this thing called NBC. How many people here have heard of NBC? If you haven't, it's not a problem. We'll dive into it anyway. And so I've been practicing that, and then Ami said, can you come and share that here? And first I said yes, and later on I was like, but I can't, I'm not ready. I'm, you know, and Ami just ignored me and I'm gonna teach, and now it's about a year, and Jay was leading a group here too. And so in the year of teaching over here, you know, I initially had these questions. So how does NBC relate to, because it comes from a humanistic psychology model, how does it relate to all this, right? I just couldn't get it. I keep asking me the question, and he wouldn't really give me an answer. I wasn't happy, but I feel like the process of teaching over the last year has sort of matured. Like, there was this one time when we were doing this group, we meet on Thursdays, and one of the participants at the end said, this is Buddhist practice, you know? And I was like, oh my God, I see the overlap. So it's really rich to be sitting here, sitting with Ami like this. It's a little awkward. I've gone from nervous to awkward. It'll keep shifting over the night. But to be doing this, because I feel like I've gained so much by being here in this community. And I'm a lay practitioner of this thing. And I am, I know enough to do damage, so be careful. And that's it. I'm just excited because even just preparing for this and reading about Tonglen, I just felt like I learned so much that can support me and my NBC practice. And so I'm excited to do this and seeing where it leads.
So what I would love for everybody to do is introduce yourself to someone you don't know, and then we'll just go around and tell each other, just hear everybody's name. So first, please.
Yeah, it's all part of the
question of what brought you here, what I'd like you to do is tell us your name, and if you could be a superhero, what superpowers would you choose and why?
My name is Pamela, and you know, I already have a superpower. I can look at things, I can look at a pile of things, and look at a space, and figure out whether or not they'll fit together and how to fit them. So I think my superpower, if I were going to be a superhero, I would choose to flow with that which I'm already good at. So I would be looking at all things, be they physical, emotional, or inanimate, and helping to fit them together.
Good. and Jeremy, and I love all things water, so probably maybe be a dolphin or so. Swim as good as a dolphin or something. For Eric, is to stay under.
My name is Lauren, and I don't know why that's so hard for me to think of what I would do, but I guess my superpower would just to be able to look at someone who needed saving and know exactly what they need to fix it. Yeah.
I'm Jenny, and I'd like my superpower to be a loving mirror so that whoever looked at me could see themselves in the mirror.
I'm Mark, and I always thought flying would be cool, but I've done that in dreams, it's been a blast. So.
My name's Ellen, and the superpower I would really like to have is to be able to find the same person.
My name is, and you'll know it differently, my name's Urban Onati, and my superpower that I'd like would be to influence people to have peace, love, and acceptance.
My name is Kevin. Good afternoon, everyone. My superhero power, I work out pretty often. I'm always like beat up and banged up, and I do a lot of yoga and stretching out. But if I could heal myself and not have to ice for the world, but myself and others, obviously. So.
My name's Heather, and I think I would be like Wonder Woman. Because, number one, she's a goddess. But she's very kind and caring and strong and powerful at the same time.
My name is Fernando, and a superpower. I'm going to have to be selfish here. Along with a certain percentage of people in the world, is to be a little bit more mindful when I'm heading someplace and leave a little earlier.
I'm Ryan. My superpower would be enlightenment.
My name is Sarah. I'm struggling to identify with a superpower. I'm really touched by all of the loving kindness offerings and gift related wishes, and mine feels like something in that area, but I'm just not sure what.
Okay, I'm Judy, and I'm going to claim a very lofty superpower, because I would like somehow to have the ability to change people so that the idea of war is just unimaginable.
Amen.
My name is Steve. The first thing that came to mind to me was to superpower to communicate and understand animals.
Mm-hmm. I'm David. I think it'd be really kind of cool to be able to, with just a touch, take somebody who's anxiety or sad, be able to calm them and give them some peace and serenity.
My name is Michael, and the superpower I would like to have is to be able to allay the suffering of people who are homeless.
My name is Jay, and I would really like to have the superpower of whenever I see a person or a community, or whenever I think about any group of people, I need that power to bring them to total peace and realize how precious human life is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so for me, superpower would be the ability to have a heart that's so strong that it can be, you know, it can do stuff. The heart just does stuff.
That's it.
It doesn't make sense, I know, but that's it.
Wow. My name's Ami, and now I'm struggling because everybody has such cool superpower. My superpower would be to embrace and embody all these superpowers. Okay, so tonight we're starting a course on a practice of, in Tibetan Buddhism, called Tonglen. Okay. So, just for fun, everybody say Tong.
Tong.
Tong. Len.
Len.
Tong.
Tong.
Len.
Len.
Tong. Len.
Tong. Len.
Okay, so now if somebody asks you, what are you studying and practicing, you can say
Tong.
Tong. Perfect. Okay. Always the first thing to know what class you're actually studying and doing. And as I was saying, you know, it's like kind of why this course, why this class? And Tong Len is a compassion practice. It's a pretty heavy-duty compassion practice, actually. Love and compassion, it's a full package. And I've really been, probably alone in this, kind of struggling with the state of the world right now. And I really feel that there's so much political upheaval and environmental degradation and social pain. I think of the images that maybe all of us are bombarded with right now in the suffering of the world in terms of the refugees and the wars and the destruction of things that are just so precious to us. And you know, I can go on and on, but I think you're probably, I mean, is anyone not in sync with what I'm talking about? Do you know what I'm talking about? Maybe kind of have a feel for it. And it's just that I feel like I can speak for myself, I'm really bombarded with these messages of pain and suffering and negativity to the point where I really began to wonder, how can I respond, right? What are my options? What do I do? How do I respond? So it's kind of a tough time for humans and other living things on this planet. And the reality, as I was thinking about this, is in Buddhism, it's always been a tough time. There isn't ever a time where this world has been completely free of suffering. And I think it's hard to lose sight of that. And I can say, well, I think it's actually like that on steroids right now. It's in our face in such a big way, and so fast, and so overwhelming. Like, how do we respond when we have fires that kill dozens of peoples and thousands of animals and burn miles of forests, right? It's like mind-numbing. I have a friend who once said, who shall remain nameless, once said that when you start to think in numbers like of a deficit like trillions or millions, the numbers get so big that they become meaningless, right? It's like we can't even absorb it. And there's that sense with this level of suffering that the numbers are so big, the suffering is so big, that my heart has begun to kind of blow it off almost because it's so overwhelming. And it's like self-preservation and self-defense. I'm catching it, which is kind of unusual for me, these moments where I'm pushing it away and not feeling it. And I realize that we're evolutionarily designed for self-preservation and to shut down, and it's hard to maintain being on that high state of survival alert all the time. Like our bodies, our beings aren't really meant to do that. So how is it then that we can begin to respond in a way that isn't just to stop feeling our feelings, to stop feeling our emotions, to have that hardness and defensiveness around the heart and to feel that closed self-protective mode? And this is where I really got excited about doing this with NBC, because when we really see and touch other people's pain, it hurts, right? It's uncomfortable. It can be difficult. When we touch and feel our own pain, it can be hard, it can be difficult, it can be painful. So we tend to shut down just when the world needs us the most. And that's why I really became motivated to begin to teach this class right now. There's another reason, if I can ramble on for another moment. the story came to mind that I just always love, and it's about this mother who she's preparing pancakes for her boys. Somehow they happen to be named Kevin and Ryan. So Kevin and Ryan are then arguing about who gets the first pancake. And Kevin's like, well, I'm older, so I should get it first. And Ryan's like, well, I'm the baby of the family, so I should have it first. And the mother sees this opportunity, like a good lesson, for a moral lesson. And she says, she's Christian. She says, well, if Jesus were sitting here, he would say, let your brother have the first pancake. You can wait. Or, I'll let my brother have the first pancake. I can wait. That's what Jesus would say. At which point, Kevin turned to his brother and said, Ryan, you be Jesus. So the story is really funny. And at the same time, it points to something else that I'm aware of right now, which is that social researchers are really talking about how narcissism and self-involvement and self-obsession is actually growing, and how it's leading to this sense of being separate and lonely and ostracized and disconnected, and even a lack of meaning and purpose in our world. And this is being expressed in the way that we treat each other and the way that we're seeing more violence and more kind of that hardness. I think one of the things that really utterly shocked me was reading the statistic on January 23rd, that it was January 23rd and there had been 11 school shootings in 23 days. Okay. Again, how do we respond with compassion? And in the face of it all, what I know, what I really believe to be true, is that we all have an inborn heart, longing, yearning, connection, to experience belonging, to experience connection, to experience caring for others, right? And to have those deep, secure bonds of intimacy and connection. As a matter of fact, I recently saw, maybe some of you saw this on a TED Talk, that said something like the top 10 reasons for or causes or factors of longevity. And I think number one or number two, maybe some of you saw this, was really surprising, and it was actually the strength of your social connections. It wasn't how you ate, it wasn't not smoking, it was the strength of our social connections. So we live in these emotional, physical experiences, right? We're spiritual beings, and we have this emotional, sometimes very conflicted feeling life in this body, right? And both are true. So this is kind of, I'm going to go around to, so this thing is, how is it that we begin to contact that deep yearning and begin to practice in ways that nurture it and bring it forward in a sense of wanting to foster and develop and connect with and respond with compassion. So that's what I wanted to explore together with Sunil, with this ancient traditional practice of Tonglen, which I'm going to teach in the very traditional form. But what I began to realize is that as we're hardening our hearts in this onslaught of pain and suffering, that I really wanted to ground it in something real, a felt love experience before we begin to contact that tender, raw, kind of, sore spot in our hearts. That in a real way, as a jumping off for compassion, not just for others, but for ourselves, both. Self-compassion and love, and compassion and love for others. Really having it grow from what really authentically lives inside of us.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add to that is, to prepare for this, I was listening to Dhamma Chodron talk, and what I was really struck by was when she said how compassion really is about a relationship to suffering. And to me, that's huge. That's the volume and sort of relationship to suffering in itself, all these different parts that are at play, and going all sorts of directions, and then what's out there interpersonally, and then like such a big level, and how to hold all of that. So, and one of the things she really stressed was about learning to stay what she called the soft spot of bodhicitta. And as I understand bodhicitta from coming to classes here, that's the desire to wake up and be enlightened so you can help others wake up, right? And so, as I understand what Pema Chodron is saying, it's these places, the ego has its habits and it's a pretty well-oiled machine and it keeps going and moving and keeps defending and hardening and all that stuff. It's pretty solid. But when things like vulnerability, groundlessness, pain, fear, all these things show up, tenderness, she calls that the soft spot. That's the little place where the clouds part and you can see, you can go into true nature almost, as I understand it. And so she, what I understand her saying is, make contact with it. Find it, be sensitive, find it, and stay with it as much as you can. So when she's teaching, she says, stay, 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 stay. And it's like almost like a dog, you know. Because the ego wants to run away and cover it up and like be safe again, you know. And so she's saying, we're all having moments of bodhicitta. So I was really touched by that. And so with the practice, I think Amir asked me to come because with the NBC practice, we really explore learning to discern what you're feeling, you know, make sense of it, and to learn to practice sitting with difficult emotions, both our own, and also when somebody else is having something difficult. It's really hard for me, when somebody's having a difficult experience, to just sit and give them the space and to be with them without changing them, fixing them, solving the problem, all of that. So to me, that really calls me to be there, kind of like the prayer of St. Francis, you know, just to be there, you know. And I think that capacity is the same thing you're talking about here, right? So yeah, that's all I can say.
So a couple just overview things. First of all is that we are going to be turning off the live stream recording at times when we do kind of more group work and discussion, just to hold confidentiality. And Sunil will be talking a little bit more about that. So if you are listening and following via live stream, or if you are missing a class, and sometimes people then follow through live stream, that's why we'll be turning it off, because it'll be a two-way participation at that point. And so tonight will be really an overview and introduction to Tonglen, NBC, and the courses. Then on class two, from my side anyway, we'll really be delving more into the practice of Tonglen and meditation at NBC. And then on the last class, we'll really be talking about where and how to apply Tonglen. How do we do it as a meditation practice, if we wanted to really take it up as a daily practice? And how do we do what I sometimes call on-the-spot Tonglen? Right? If you just see that homeless person and you feel something, how do you train and cultivate that as a response as opposed to turning away if it feels uncomfortable? As some of the children said, stay. I just had this question as I was thinking about it is, can you imagine what the world would look like if we designed it for generosity? You know? If we designed absolutely everything with the idea of fostering generosity of heart. Your workplace, our family, our institution. So instead of right now we're all just absorbing this kind of frenetic consumeristic and materialistic scientific worldview, where if we can measure it and put dollar numbers on it, it's a value. And if not, it's not. And yet, what researchers of happiness have shown, that after you've made enough money just to take care of your basic goods, I know 5 years ago, maybe it was more like 10 years ago now, it was $10,000. Like if you were a single person and you made $10,000, anything over that did not increase your happiness ratio. It's really interesting. So what about if we really design the world for connection, right? For altruism, for compassion, right? Instead of assuming that the thing that we want to do is really maximize our self-interest and our return. And I think this occurred to me because in a way the Buddha was really a radical dude. You know, he was really an advocate for personalized and social transformation. He was against the stream of his dominant culture, and sometimes, although always skillfully, very ferociously and with intent. And his real insight was into the nature of reality and into this understanding that our own happiness, guess where it comes from? It really comes from stopping obsessively worrying about our own happiness and all the time, and instead really actually beginning to worry about the happiness of others. And he realized that, embodied that, taught that, how living in the altruistic flow of compassion and empathy really is a passport to happiness, right? You want a passport to happiness? The guaranteed way of a trip to achieve a higher, sustained, unshakable sense of inner happiness, this is it. Being in that flow of altruistic giving. And he broke this down into two things, which many of you, if you've been studying Buddhism at all, have heard, this is also in yoga. So one is Maitri. Anyone know what that means? That's Sanskrit for love.
Friendly.
Yeah, like friendly. It's actually, whoops, there's an A here. It's often translated either as love, loving kindness, sometimes friendliness.
It's the wrong translation.
Is it? What is it usually?
Actual translation is friendship.
Friendship, okay. You're right. Friendship. And then Karuna.
Compassion.
Compassion. Right? So what's the difference between love and compassion? And why this is important is we're going to be, these both relate to the practice of Tonglen. So in Buddhism, the Buddha taught that love, friendship, friendliness is really...
Loving friendship.
Loving friendship, thank you. Perfect. Loving friendship is the wish for others to be happy, right? For them to have something. For instance, it may be as simple as having a sense of love. You want to give your child an ice cream cone. You know, you want them to have something good, that sense of outpouring, wanting to give. Then compassion, in English, you know, compassion with suffer, so to suffer with, right? And to feel compassion is the desire to take away the pain of others, to take away the misfortune of others. So there are two different aspects. Maitri and compassion, and they go together. Now, I'm a little reluctant to say this with Jay in the room. But you can correct me. The two glosses that I've heard of this word karuna, the two
what?
Glosses, like the transliteration of what the etymology means,
mm-hmm.
or the way you could break it down and it's literally translated, like compassion, you would say, literally means from its root to suffer with. The two glosses that I've heard of karuna is one is a movement of the heart's response to pain. So that may be more of an explanation. explanation than a literalization, because that's how I've heard it broken down, which I love that, the movement of the heart's response to pain. Right? If we think about that, that's compassion. And then the other is to suspend happiness. Do either of these make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So to feel love and compassion, we really have to shift away from our self-centered focus to sense and feel the true condition of someone else, right? To honestly face their pain and to meet that pain with love rather than aversion and anger, so that our, I always like to say, our hearts can break open rather than break down. Yeah.
So this is really by Brené Brown. How many of you know Brené Brown? Yeah, she's got this talk on TED Talk.
What's her name?
Brené Brown. Did I say it right?
Yeah. Brené, so it sounds like Brené, but there's a B in the beginning.
Yeah. Brené Brown. And she's a researcher, and she has this video on the difference between empathy and sympathy. So sympathy is more of someone suffering over there, and I'm sitting away going, I'm sorry, you're having a bad experience. I don't know, I keep myself separate in a way, so I protect myself. I'm sorry, you're, you know, and that, there is an aspect of care in that, and acknowledging the suffering. Empathy is to be with, so, but not getting lost in the suffering. So there's going closer in and being with them in a felt way, so they feel like there's another human being with them in their pain, not that they have to get swallowed by it. So that's what I'm hearing as you're talking about compassion, is that I am with you in your pain, but, right?
Yeah. And the sense that, I love this idea, is that what the Buddha really taught is that this is the opposite, this is the alternative, this is the antidote to our heart shutting down in the midst of so much overwhelming suffering, right? It's that we uncover, we touch, we experience, we nourish that tender, raw, sensitive sore spot, that soft spot that you were talking about earlier, because that's exactly the place where compassion of the heart, where love of the heart is, right? And so to go through kind of discovering, uncovering, that's what Buddhism really talks about, recovering our own inherently loving heart. So there's a sense that the practice of compassion always leads us back to this recovery and this touching back in with our own love and compassion, so that we can, in fact, be with someone else's pain. Right? So this idea is part of why I like these two glosses of Karuna, is that we're not creating compassion in our heart. It's that there's a natural movement of the heart in response to someone else's pain. And there's, even if it's very deeply buried or we cover it up, it actually is always happening. That's the thing. It never is not happening. Even if you're someone who doesn't experience compassion or you think, I kind of just don't feel a lot, it's not that it's not happening. That's what the Buddha taught. You're having a movement of the heart in response. And part of that movement then is to suspend happiness. What does that mean? So that working with that felt quality, we begin that we're really suspending our own momentary gratification that shutting down brings, right? Because shutting down brings a sense of being protected, of being okay, of not being in an uncomfortable place. And so we suspend that in order to get in touch with that movement of the heart, this compassion, right? And it naturally happens. And so what Buddhism does is it just says exactly that. Because of the risks of vulnerability, meaning, you know, that sense of uncovering all those feelings inside of us. And sometimes it feels overwhelming and like what's coming up inside of us, how do I deal with it? Then we can, what the Buddha taught is that there are practices where we can begin to uncover, to recover that natural sense of tenderness towards others. And it will happen. You know, if we practice gently, persistently, then organically, we'll uncover it that way. So why I wanted to dwell here to start with, and then we'll take a break, and then I'll just finish up quickly and then turn it over to you,
okay,
if that's not okay,
yeah,
is why this is so important, is this movement of the heart, the soft spot, the source, but that willingness, that recognition of willingness to suspend our own, what I'm going to call narcissism, because often it's translated as self-cherishing, and yet part of, I feel like, our society is that we don't cherish ourselves, we don't know how to do that in a healthy way, and so we hear that and we're like, oh my God, I already beat myself up all the time, I don't know how to value myself, and now you're telling me to stop cherishing a little bit I do. But I think it's more a narcissism, it's more an obsessive trying to get my own happiness at the expense of everything else, including my own happiness. And so it all begins with what I'm talking about right now, and that's, this is what the Buddha was talking about. We've got to get, first of all, in touch with that own soft spot, that natural movement of the heart. And if we can't feel it, to begin to at least believe, to believe in that, to believe this is true, to believe it is there, and it's naturally there, and if I'm a human being, it is there and potentially available to me. Okay, so that's our starting place. All right? We all agree to that? All right, how about, you ready for a break? We'll take a 5-minute break. There's water and some snacks. Enjoy. We'll ring the bell in about 5 minutes to come back. They're suffering. Now, this gets debated because people have said, hey, somebody named this practice backwards because you want to take their suffering away before you give them something, right? The example is exactly that with the child. They often say, if your child has a fever of 104, which I remember having as a child, if my parents gave me an ice cream cone, I'd have no interest in it. If they gave me a cute little bunny rabbit, right, I'd have no interest in it. All I wanted in that moment was to feel better, right? So what you need to do is actually take away someone's suffering before you give them that which is going to make them happy. So it's called giving and taking, but really the way we do the practice is taking and then giving. Does that make sense? It'll become clear. And tonight, what we're going to do is we'll do the actual practice in full starting next week. Many people have been teaching this now outside the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, including in the Insight tradition and the Zen tradition, but not a lot of people really get to go into it in depth in the way that it's really meant to be taught and understood and practiced. So in our short time, I was hoping to kind of at least do that. Where it fits historically is that in Buddhism, which we might think of as an inner science of progressively nourishing and practicing love and compassion, okay, through the many different kinds of meditation and daily practices, there's a progression. And it kind of progresses in a way through, let me say, gratitude practices, and then what we call equalizing, and then exchanging. So this is the progression in Tibetan Buddhism. And what this means is that gratitude is first you begin, this is based on the understanding of reincarnation, so you begin to find the gratitude towards all living beings as being your mother, which then gives you to, brings you to a point of equalizing, where you begin to see that every living being equally wants to be out of suffering. Like, there isn't a living being on this planet that wants to experience an instant of suffering of any kind. And there isn't a living being on this planet that doesn't want to be happy. So we're all equal in how we want to be happy and we move towards happiness. Like, that's what actually gets us out of bed in the morning, right? Is not wanting to suffer. I'm a little sore being in bed. I need to get out and pee or something like that. And wanting something. Like, we have a job we want to go to. And they say, I don't really want to go to my job, but I want the money from the job. There's something that I think is going to make me happy in that motivates me. And if we begin to realize that, we see that that's true for every being. Yeah, Dan.
Are you referring only to sentient beings or to all animals and creatures on the earth?
Sentient beings are considered any living being on this earth. And it's considered that every single one has the same motivation down to an amoeba. Because if you touch an amoeba and it experiences that it's uncomfortable, it moves away. And if it sees something that's going to feed it and it wants it, it moves towards it, which is a very fundamental love. Way moving away from what makes us unhappy. This is the two movements all the time, away and towards, and away and towards, and that's what kind of creates our suffering, is that we're really being tossed away, tossed around by that, instead of being able to kind of rest in the middle in an open spaciousness. Does that make sense? Okay, you're welcome. And then the third one is exchanging, which is that sense of altruism where I'm willing and longing to suspend my own happiness, which on the surface might look like exchanging my happiness for others, but really what it means is exchanging my self-obsession with the obsession for serving and helping others. And as I mentioned, Tonglen can be practiced as a full meditation, as a daily meditation practice, where you just decide, I want to cultivate and nourish my compassionate heart. It can be on-the-spot response. And we're going to really be going through all of those. It's considered the pinnacle and the most powerful practice of compassion here, or one of the two. It's also considered, because of that, really, in some ways, the most challenging, difficult, and rewarding. So why am I teaching this to beginners? You may ask. It's because I think that desperate times need desperate measures, right? And so I think we're ready. And it's fully doable, right? Especially with Sunil to help guide us into a felt lived reality of it. So what this does is, this is going to bring together, yes?
I just wanted to give a comment about that progression of gratitude, equalizing, and exchange.
Yeah.
I think in these times, just gratitude, forgiveness is also a foundational practice,
yeah,
with gratitude.
Good point.
Before we go to the equalizing.
Maybe this is true.
Tibetans did not have that kind of hatred or aversion that we feel right now. So it may not be there, but I think in these times we need forgiveness also,
yeah,
along with gratitude.
I totally agree. Thank you. So I think what I'm going to do is stop there and circle back to, there are two steps to the preliminaries of this practice. One is breath meditation, because this Tonglen is very powerful because it uses breath and it uses visualization. So you're going to learn a particular breath meditation and you're going to learn a particular meditation. I mean, the visualization, and the two will go together. And so the whole basis is that, and being able to contact and connect with this soft spot, with the felt lived experience within us. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Sorry, are we not recording now?
Yes, thank you.
Hi, everybody.
The being present. Before we do Tonglen practice, if we're doing it as a daily practice, we begin by taking some time to come into this posture, to settle our body, speech, and mind, which means to allow our awareness to really come into the present moment through, with our anchor is the physical felt, physical sensations in the body, allowing the chatter of our mind to release, really giving our thinking mind, our conceptual mind, a much needed vacation, and bring our full awareness to the felt, tactile sensations of the breath in the body. Feeling it at the abdomen, at the natural flow, moves out and in, and allowing the tide of the breath to flow as freely as the tide of the ocean on the shore. And then as a method to keep ourselves to begin to develop that sit-stay ability to be present. Begin to count or punctuate the exhalation with a count of 1 to 10, and then when you reach 10, you begin again at 1. So that's it. As you breathe out, it's 1. And then the inhalation naturally follows. And 2. Allowing again the whole exhalation to flow freely to its natural turn point, where the tide of the breath organically turns, pauses, and the inhalation follows. 3. In your own natural rhythm until you reach 10. And then begin at 1 again. Soon, if you notice that your attention, your awareness, has been kidnapped or shanghaied or hijacked, when you're thinking about dinner or what's coming next, notice that and immediately rejoice that you're lucid again, that you're present again. It feels so much better to be present and connected. And releasing that object that shanghaied your attention, you turn to the breath, the felt physical sensation. And it's like you relax and settle in ever more deeply. In the exhalation, you just really allow yourself to relax, release even more deeply, and enjoy. And resume your count. Releasing your meditation, turning your awareness, expanding it out back into the room. So a couple points. A successful meditation is not getting to 10. A successful meditation is catching that you've wandered off your object and bringing yourself back. And every single time you do that, you can rejoice and really take an instant or a moment. The process will start to get like anything. When you go to the gym, it's hard when you've tried to do it at first, but through practice, it gets easier and easier. But that sense of rejoicing that you're present again, that you're lucid again, that it feels good, really kind of checking in, this feels good. And then relaxing, returning, and really enjoying that process. It's instead of scolding your dog for moving, you're rewarding your dog for sitting down and staying, right? Why do you actually call it mind training or attention and awareness training? So these two things, this really begins to give the stability of our awareness to allow us to connect with and contact with whatever arises within us, whatever emotions and unmet needs and conflicting, wild, messy things, and not be thrown off. So that, and then what we've done here with Sunil, that beginning to stay, contact and connect with and stay in that soft spot, forms together the basis for the next step of Tonglen that we'll learn next week. So I recommend practicing at least a little bit every day, the breath counting. Even if you do it 5 minutes a day, it's better to do it daily than to try and do it a long time, like 25 minutes or an hour the first day and nothing the rest of the week. Right? So short commitment, but daily. Thanks so much, Sunil.
Thank you.
And Sunil does, isn't it? Oops, no, no.
It's not open. Start. Yeah, if you can get on the mailing list, then we'll send out on the Diamond Light mailing list, then we'll send out a notice when the group opens again. We do a Thursday night group. So,
it gets closed at a certain point so people can work more intimately together, and then we'll open it up again.
Yeah, the next series I'd like to open up is around the inner critic and that kind of stuff. Compassion for that.
When do you think you might be opening that?
I'm not sure. Next few weeks. Few weeks.
Okay, so let's have our closing prayers and then thank you. Is really giving away the good positive energy that we've created here to others so that the world we imagine, that healed, perfect, peaceful world, compassionate, is quickly manifested for the benefit of every single living being. And we're here if you have questions. And I just want to announce again that Venerable Tenzin Choking.